busy Thursday. Got to have Jovanovski on the show today. Jovocop, 9:30. Have some Panthers thoughts. And then we've got James Myrtle at 10. Big Leafs day. Playing the Florida Panthers. But before I get into some Leafs thoughts, I got a quick couple of things. Number one, I'm actually going to start with baseball today before I talk Leafs. And I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old because I feel like I like baseball more and more each passing year. Like, wow. But I've also had a lot of times in my life watching playoff baseball or baseball games where I used to complain a lot about how the game was too long. I did. It drove me nuts, especially with the start times that were late. And granted, baseball has lucked out with these matchups, right? They don't have the Dodgers there that they're trying to cram into a super late start. They don't have the Giants that they're trying to cram into a super late start. They lucked out with having Philly, Arizona, and the two Texas teams from a time zone standpoint. But it feels like we can get all these games in. And even tonight, they're doing the thing where one of the games starts at 5 o'clock, right? And I kind of think hockey needs to take a page out of their book, which is, hey, let's make sure that people can see the best part of our year. The part of our season that we all claim is what it's all for, the Stanley Cup playoffs, which Gary Bettman says time and time again doesn't need to be tinkered with, that it's the best in all of professional sports. Maybe let people see it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Maybe fewer games that are as late as they are. Maybe try to push some starts up for playoffs. I think you'll still be able to sell those tickets. I think you'll still be able to make some of those markets happy. Anyway, it feels like this city, right? I'm having baseball conversations with people because I work in sports. So everyone I'm having a conversation about the playoffs with and what's going on in baseball is also connected to the sport professionally. But I will say that if you can kind of get past the Blue Jays bitterness that we're all still feeling, and rightfully so, again, this is not dismissive of that whatsoever. If you feel a little sick of baseball because it reminds you of the year that you just had with the Blue Jays, I get it. Even Shapiro said it was the grind in a 20-year baseball career. It was the biggest grind he's ever been through. Mm-hmm. I felt that way as a fan. I've watched some bad Blue Jay seasons, and that one, in a lot of ways, was more painful and more trying than some of the years where the team was just flat out bad and you knew it right away. Even when you'd go to the ballpark in 2017, 2018 and went, hey, cool, no runs tonight. Hey, cool. No runs, but no expectation of runs.
There you go.
No expectation of runs. It was a little underrated having no expectations. Anyway, I get it. I get that Jays fans are sour, but baseball truly having a moment. The Bryce Harper thing is real. The Philly thing is real. I think it's actually resonating beyond just baseball fans. And I think even the Philly stuff is bigger than the Bryce Harper stuff. Or it's not bigger than Bryce, but it's becoming something that everybody seemingly wants to tune in on with this team, with this wagon of a team full of just absolute mashers in October. Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, Castellanos, Trey Turner, the list goes on and on, right? You want to be a part of that. You want to see those guys mash.
Yep.
And our poor Arizona Diamondbacks, poor Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., they never stood a chance. You look at their records. You look at the Arizona Diamondbacks really shouldn't have been in the postseason this year. Really shouldn't have been there. And the way that they limped into the postseason was even worse than the Blue Jays. And now they're just getting, yeah, their brains
bashed in. They got in because the Cubs lost a bunch
of
games.
Yeah, no, they're getting absolutely smoked. And this one's not going to change. I thought last night, I bet, actually, I put my money where my mouth is. Two best bets in a row. And it's fine. It's fine. Just post it there. It's free money on my Twitter. I said the Astros were going to win because they have one of the craziest splits. They're over 20 games above 500 on the road this year, and they're below 500 team at home. It's nuts. You thought it sucked being a Blue Jays fan at home this year? If you were an Astros fan, you didn't have all those World Series pelts on the wall, you would have felt a little bit different about going to the ballpark this year. You would have been way more inclined to go down to Arlington in the same state and say, hey, I'd actually like to see a ball game here. I just didn't think that the clutch Astros were going to go down 3-0. It was just hard for me to believe that that was going to happen. Scherzer jumping in. Mackey was so excited about Scherzer being made. Scherzer, Scherzer, Scherzer. I was like, yeah, I don't think the history of the old injured guy coming back too soon, who's the dog competitor, who's desperate to be out there, is going to go out there and pitch a gem. I don't think he's going to go out there and just spin one.
He wasn't very good.
Yeah, he wasn't very good.
The Astros are 51-30 at home this year.
Yeah, 51-30. That's what I'm saying. Over 20 games above 500.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds better saying over 20 games than 21. Just so you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Just for you as a stats guy, Jobo, in the future, if you ever want to steal that bit, you just do that.
Exaggerate.
Anyway, Bryce Harper, regional rivalry in Texas, the pitch clock, which worked out insanely well, the Masher Phillies, the breakout in Baltimore, and just the upheaval in a division that always felt like it was Yankees and Red Sox. The fact that it's the Yankees and Red Sox that have to claw their way back and jump over three baseball teams that are all in competitive cycles, as the Yankees and Red Sox don't look to do rebuilds. What a coup for the American League East. What a coup for just interest around baseball in general. And then you've got the Shohei sweepstakes that are going to be coming up.
Yeah.
Which are a little, I got to say, it's a little muted knowing he's not pitching, right? It's not going to be the same without him pitching, but it's still going to be there. And then, yeah, either a World Series rematch, which is about as perfect as it could get, right? That's beautiful, especially since this time around the Phillies would very likely be favored, unquestionably be favored. You end up in a scenario where you get the split, and then you get the potential for the mega, which is the baseball might even just rig it. Yeah. They might even let the Astros cheat again to make sure that they can get back there for, three in a row. To be able to have a World Series, that's on the table. That's there because the Phillies don't look like they're going anywhere and the Astros don't look like they're going anywhere either. Mm-hmm. Either that or you welcome back a market that has been pretty dry the last little while in the Texas Rangers, a really important market for baseball and a team that's red hot, full of a bunch of interesting players as well. So, yeah, just I can't get over what a win this is for the sport and how a couple of years ago, all we could talk about with baseball was the median age of the viewer and how the sport was dying and how complicated it was going to be to try to change this thing. And even the labor relations going into the pandemic, and they were just the worst of all of the sports when it came to this. During the pandemic, baseball had the lowest, I would say, Q rating. They were very unpopular. The owners and the players both had horrible, horrible looks. If you remember, who's the player? Damn it. There were guys doing, Pilar did the We Need to Feed Our Families, but I can't remember who it was, but right in the middle of the pandemic, someone from Ryan Zimmer, where he did the whole, I don't even want to play baseball if I can't hang out with the boys in the clubhouse, right as people were getting locked inside and they were trying to bring baseball back. It was bad. They had bad labor relations, bad PR, bad everything for baseball. But right now, again, feels, I don't want to say more relevant than ever, because that's not true whatsoever, but it feels like the resurgence of baseball is totally real and that they gathered all this momentum from these rule changes. They gathered all this momentum from these added playoff teams. And even though I think in the long run, the added playoff teams are going to need to be addressed so that the regular season in baseball stays special, special, special. So far, even that has been an absolute coup for them. It's been everything they've touched has been gold. So congrats to Rob Manfred, someone who we dunked on, we clowned on. I had no kind words for Manfred. Remember after the Astros? That was not great. The piece of metal, that wasn't great. That was not a good time for Manfred. But now the sport is just in an incredible place. So congrats to baseball. I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I think if you can just shove your Blue Jays bitterness aside, just a touch, just a little to the side, I would suggest tuning in at 5 o'clock tonight and watching some playoff baseball. Which one's first tonight?
The Diamondbacks, which is weird because that's 2 p.m. local time.
Yeah. Yeah, guess what?
The craziest one I saw. So tickets for game one for the Phillies were like $467 to get in. Tickets for game one in Arizona. That's U.S., yeah. Just discounted 20% to $15.
Dude, that's one of the funniest things about being Canadian is when people bring that up, well, they'll be like, that's 460, and they don't even say U.S. to start, because we just think we're them.
Yeah, so it's like, that's actually like $700 bucks Canadian.
Just lump ourselves in.
I like that, too. We do two things where we're basically guessing all the time. One is Fahrenheit with the states, and the other is the money, where it's like, and I, you know what I think we do all the time? I feel, for me personally, when I'm guessing American money, it's always more. I try to go high, because you want it to be less, right? So if you go, hey, 400 is 700, I always try to put it at like 750, and then you go do it, and it's like 800. How is this the thing? And it's because you usually end up having to pay shipping and duties on stupid stuff. And we never buy it. Anyway, all right, quick. Panthers tonight. There's a couple things for this that are super interesting for the Leafs. I probably should have led with Leafs, but whatever. Screw you if you're complaining. There's going to be lots of Leafs today, all right? There's going to be tons. I already told you. I got Jovanovski. I got Myrtle. Just relax.
Next hour and a half is all Leafs.
You could hit the 10-second button on the pod when you're listening to it. So subscribe to the podcast. That's what it's for. Bing, bing, bing. You hit that 10-second button. You think that when I listen to podcasts, I want to hear about all their interests? I got things to do. I can't imagine anybody who listens to me on 2x speed, though. You got to be an absolute lunatic. Because I get it if you're listening to someone who is slow speaking, clear. Right. But I speak so quickly that I just mash words together, and sometimes the thoughts get completely out of place because I'm going too fast. The amount of times that I've had to try to tell myself slow down when doing this stuff, there might be, the only greater number is stars in the sky. Stars in the sky, and then number two, times I've told myself to slow down while speaking. Anyway, Panthers tonight, Leafs, the team that embarrassed you all. The team that, hey, do you think those teenagers that were in the square, those friends of Jobo, are still going, we want Florida? You think that they're doing that tonight? Do you think that there's one guy, do you think there's one guy in the group, a funny guy in the group, that put that in the group chat, we want Florida for tonight?
And then the rest, a couple.
And then one of the guys left the group chat. Then it was just middle finger emojis all the way through.
One guy downvoted it.
Yeah, exactly. Shut up. You have sort of a weird Gen Z name. Shut up. Braximus. I don't know. So weird.
Braximus?
Yeah, I don't know. You guys got weird names.
It's like a 12th century noble name.
No, but that's the thing. You guys are trying to take new name or old names and spin them into new names. It's not good. Yeah. Braximus. Yeah. I'm sticking with that.
It plays.
My first one was going to be Brevin, but no.
Brethren.
So this is the perfect team to be in town to shine a spotlight on what the Leafs' issues are right now. We had Christopher Stieg on this week. What did he talk about? Minutes. You got to give these guys ice time. You got to find ways to play these dudes. And now Sheldon Keefe has decided that he's going to bump Matthew Knies up the lineup. He's decided, hey, we're not getting enough of Knies. Austin, I know you thought in the group chat that it was a slight to Matthew Knies, or sorry, a slight to Max Domi, where he said we can get more out of Knies, or we're not getting enough out of Knies, or Knies has more to offer. There was some kind of quote like that. That had nothing to do with Max Domi. That's purely we're not getting enough out of Knies when he's buried down there. Right now, the Florida Panthers are coming to town as a team with, when healthy, because they're missing one of their most important guys in Sam Bennett right now. When they're healthy, they've got 9 really good forwards, unimpeachably good forwards, 9 of them. Toronto has what, 5? If you Bertuzzi, who, by the way, Bertuzzi's not playing a ton right now either. He's down to the lowest average ice time of his career. And I know it's 3 games, I think, since his first year of his career. This guy gets a ton of ice. And part of it is not playing on the power play. Part of it is that he's been taking penalties. I think he has 5 already. I think he's got 5 minors in 3 games. You got to chill out, Tyler. You got to relax. I get it. But the Florida Panthers have 9 good forwards, and the Leafs have 5, maybe 6 if Knies pans out. I'm not willing to go over that number. I'm not putting Yarncroc into that. I'm sorry, Max Domi into that. I'm not putting David Kampf into that. I'm talking about guys who can provide you some offense, play a little, like above average.
Mm-hmm. Could be a game changer.
Above average. I think Florida is loaded there. This is their strength. This is the strength of their team. And if you look at Toronto, just even look at the ice time. Right now, Florida, go to their hockey reference page and pull up average ice time. You will find that the Toronto Maple Leafs have 4 forwards that are averaging more than 17 minutes a night right now. With the Florida Panthers, you'll find 6. Mm. And remember, they don't have Sam Bennett right now. It would be 7. They've got Anton Lundell, who's a really good player, still playing 14 minutes. Like, Toronto's, it's not working the same way. Right now, you have a coach who doesn't trust his players and who has, this is a little, I'm a chicken and egg guy here. And I'm going to talk about this with Myrtle because I don't think Max Domi has played very well, and I think that he's a really tough fit for this roster, and that's just becoming very, very clear, very, very evident. But I also don't think that we should be coming to this conclusion during his first 3 games as a Toronto Maple Leaf. I think it's really hard to all of a sudden have a guy who grew up in this city, whose name is famous in this city, show up and play a couple of games with a team that was playing pretty sloppy hockey, who's got a ton of new pieces. All four of these left wingers, by the way, didn't start last year with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Nyes feels more familiar, but that kid came in for the playoffs, people.
Yeah.
The rest of the left wingers, they're brand spanking new. The roster had a ton of turnover. They had a ton of turnover from the trade deadline, and then they had a ton of turnover during the offseason. All these guys are being thrown together, and you're telling me that the guy with the famous name, the guy who was brought in here to provide offense, who played his former team in the Montreal Canadiens to start the season, in front of his city, the place where he's been dying to play, the only guy on the roster that's being asked, hey, are you going to take this number? And he says, no, that was my dad's number when Sam Lafferty left town. It might take a little while for him to act. It might take a little time to get comfortable. It might not be the best thing to have after the first game, images of Sheldon Keefe taking him aside and having conversations about what he needs to be doing and have that be essentially the biggest story in the entire city, right? I think we could say that that's potentially fair. But yeah, Florida, 9 forwards deep. Not tonight. They're going to be 8. But a team that's 9 forwards deep, a team that does some things extremely well that Toronto has struggled with in the first couple of games. And one is beating you off the rush. Look at what Chicago did to Toronto with the odd man rushes. And then forechecking like animals. That's what these guys do extremely well. That was one of the problems for Toronto last year in the playoffs. And one of the things that we ended up seeing that was just so different between these groups. And then they can establish a cycle with real effectiveness. These are Florida staples. This is what Florida does well. And right now, if you look at the Leafs, they're going to have to trust some of their forwards. And we're going to have to see if some of these blue line pairings work just a little bit better at being able to kill that cycle and get the puck out to not get hemmed in and crushed and caved in by this Florida team. Because, yeah, it's 3 games in and the Leafs are 2-1 and they've started these games slowly and there's back and forth and you've got positive narratives like the way that Matthews looks and the way that Nylander looks and blah, 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 blah. But this thing, I think the conversation becomes fairly big in the sports world if the Leafs drop this game and they look kind of bad doing it. If they look bad and the Florida Panthers don't have Montour, they don't have Ekblad, and they don't have Sam Bennett, and their strengths match up extremely well against the Toronto Maple Leafs' weaknesses, like they might seem, which is the depth of forwards and their ability to kind of punish what Toronto's defense core might be the weakest at. It might be 4 games in, but we might already be doing the, well, how is this team all that different from what we've seen last year? And is this team better? And does this team have the things that it needed around the margins? Because I think a big part of the play, a big, big, big part of this offseason's play by Brad Treliving was to try to not just get the personalities in the room different around these guys. Because, great, Ryan Reeves, that's awesome that you're getting the belt handed to you by Austin Matthews, but it's created an extremely tough problem with the fourth line, which is you've got the team's worst defensive player playing with the team's best defensive player. Mm-hmm. And Sheldon Keefe knows it because he's giving David Kampf 67% of his draws in the O-zone, which is not what David Kampf is supposed to be for.
No.
That's a pretty jarring number when you look at it. The pieces really don't fit right now. They've got some talent, but Brad Treliving, when he went out this offseason, was to change the personalities, but also try to add some offensive punch. Try to add Klingbergs, try to add Domies, try to add Bertuzzis. Try to make sure that Toronto could score with some of these teams, that they weren't going to just be solely reliant upon Austin Matthews and William Nylander to carry this team offensively and score all of their goals in a playoff series. And so for Sheldon Keefe, I think there's going to be a couple questions tonight. One is, does Matthew Nyes just immediately become a staple in the top 6 and they've got that figured out? And then two is, how are you going to start to utilize these bottom 6 forwards? Because right now, the way that you're deploying them, the minutes that they're getting, it's not sustainable for success on this team. You can't have Cale Yarncroc be 6th amongst forwards in minutes with 14, and then the drop-off after that be a kid that's going back down to junior at 12, mm-hmm. followed by everyone else averaging 12 or less. Domi, Nyes, Kampf, Gregor, Reeves, down to 8 minutes for Reeves. 8 minutes a night for Reeves. 11 minutes a night for David Kampf, who you gave a pretty healthy contract extension to. And I know I don't want to turn Kampf into Kerfoot where it becomes the player who's making more than the veteran minimum. Mm-hmm. that we start to hyper-focus on. I think Kampf is a good player. I didn't mind that signing. But with the pieces that they have on the team, it's hard to see where the hell he's going to get ice time unless it's a pure third-line shutdown role where he's playing with Yarncroc. But then, I don't know who the left winger is. Like, I don't know if you're supposed to be playing Gregor more minutes because you can't put Domi there. So, anyway, it's a challenge for Sheldon Keefe, but he's got to figure it out. And it's one that I think he's going to have to figure out by getting more information, by playing these guys more, trusting these guys more, and realizing that the goal of the Toronto Maple Leafs season is not to win games in the first couple of weeks. It is to win games, sorry, but it's not the most important thing. This team is going to win in the regular season. They are going to be able to accumulate enough points. They have too much talent up top. The goal has to be to figure out what you really have, what pieces you might need to move, who you can rely upon. But the only way that you're going to figure that out is if you actually put people in those roles and you see what they can do there. So yeah, let's see the mix. You already mixed up Toronto Maple Leafs, where they've already switched up the forward groups. Sheldon Keefe the tinkerer, and they've already shifted up the D pairings against this, yeah, very, very, very deep Florida group.
How many minutes in a night would you want to see Austin Matthews play?
Well, what was he?
Is that 19 around that right now?
Matthews is average 23-20 right now.
Yeah, I was going to say 23-20. Marner's 23-45, Matthews 23-20.
Yep.
And then William Nylander's 20-33. Mm-hmm. Tavares 18-47. Those are their top guys. Yeah, I think that...
Let's set down to 19,
18? No. Both those guys are going to be 20 minutes a night. But, yeah, they're going to have to spread out those 3 minutes to other forwards with him and Marner. I don't think Marner's are going to come down. Keefe just rides him during the regular season. But, yeah, I don't want to see Austin Matthews play that much. And I don't think he will. Again, part of this is power play and penalty kill, doing both special teams. Part of this is the fact that they've chased some games. Mm-hmm. So they've asked Matthews to jump over the boards for extra. Part of it is that, you know, they played an extra frame.
Yep.
But, yeah, they're going to start to have to trust people. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. Let's talk about the Florida side of things. Has there been any momentum for this franchise? Has there been any momentum for this fan base after going to a cup final? Because, boy, if there isn't now with Tkachuk, with a cup run, with that team, it's hard to be optimistic about the future. Ed Jovanovski, next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. Leafs Panthers tonight. It's going to be on Bally Sports, south of the border, with our guy, pre- and post-game analyst for Bally Sports Florida, of course, Olympic gold medalist, former NHL defenseman, Ed Jovanovski. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Morning, guys. Well, heading to the rink to see what kind of line juggling we got this morning.
All right. Right and early, getting in there, doing the work, huh? Like, what's the routine? You must have, you keep it kind of like playing days where you go in early, you get back, you do a midday nap before the game?
the nap, not so much, just with other things going on. But yeah, I just kind of head to the rink in the morning, just morning skate, have our meetings after there, and then head back just for a little bit, then kind of head back to the game. Almost like a player, just not... No pressure involved.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the difference. You can have beer during the day. You know, you can have a nice Guinness. Actually, it's too hot there. You know, you have a Corona. Or although it's like
a little afternoon margarita.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you just sip on one, just have a nice relaxing day, fire on the TV, don't have to worry about any of the stresses. It's fine. You're gonna crush it. It'll be all right. So, you know, you're gonna see line juggling for the Leafs tonight. Like, that's already a thing. And I was talking about it on the other side of the break, but this Florida team's a good look in the mirror for Toronto because Florida plays a ton of their forwards and gives them all ice time. Like, they're missing Sam Bennett, but you're a team where, yeah, you're going to have seven guys that get legit ice every single night. And I wonder, just to start this thing, how it's looked this year for that group to you, the strength of the team, the forward group.
Well, I mean, it's early on, right? And Sam Bennett, you're right, is a big loss, you know, right now for the team. He's kind of that spark plug guy, kind of goes hard in every situation. You know, but I think right now, being three games in, you kind of break it down game by game, You know, you look at the first game, the forwards, you know, had a lot of opportunities to score, just couldn't score. You know, the Winnipeg game, you know, decided to play late. That carried over into New Jersey, which they looked like the Stanley Cup team the first couple periods. They looked really good and then just kind of foot off the pedal a little bit. But listen, I think you look around league-wide, you're dependent on your couple lines to get the job done on most nights. And nothing, you know, it's going to kind of, you know, hinge on Barkov, you know, Verhaeghe, you know, these type of players, you know, to get results. And especially now with a few injuries in the lineup, you have to do your best to stay afloat. You don't want to start chasing, you know, the standings this early on. So tonight, it's almost intriguing matchup because it's you look at the way Toronto finished their game versus Chicago, not very good, and Florida coming off a big win. So it'd be an interesting game here tonight.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really early important test for Toronto because they haven't faced a bunch of tough teams, right? Like they played Montreal, they played Minnesota, and then they play Chicago, who, yeah, picked first for a reason, right? Now, I kind of want to see from Toronto a little bit of animus towards the other team. Like, you know, Toronto brought in some guys to change the complexion of the room. They weren't there for the postseason last year, right? Like, the Ryan Reeves and the Domies and the Bertuzzis of the world. But I do feel like if your personality is going to feel different, you probably want to feel that against the team that bounced you last season. What do you think that looks like from Florida's end? Because, yeah, I don't know. There was the Gudas thing. He's gone. You mentioned it. Sam Bennett was a huge target for Leaf fans, but he's not playing in this one. Obviously, Tkachuk. But, yeah, how do you feel about, like, the potential chippiness for tonight?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at what Toronto, you know, they brought in some meat there for, you know, I think down the stretch, right? You want to have your team balanced where you have top players and you want to make sure things are policed. But, you know, to be honest with you, it's not really a chicken shit league anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there's one guy that's scared. Just the way that guys are protected now, you don't want to put your team in a hole, you know, where you're chasing the game and killing penalties all game. And I think this early on in the year, you know, you're looking to get wins and you don't want to put your team in that jeopardy. But I think the Leafs made good moves. I mean, you look at Ryan Reeves, who's a guy that, oh, he can play, can chip in given his minutes and fight when needed. But I don't think, you know, from Florida standpoint, too much to be concerned about. You go out there and play hard between the whistles and just worry about scoring goals and winning a hockey game. But the intimidation factor, I don't think is coming from Florida side per se. I think it's when you look at a team, I think they're team tough. They're going to play hard. And they're an honest team. You're not going to get a guy that's going to be running around and taking liberties on guy where you're going to have to activate a guy like Reeves to go out there and chase guys around and do something, you know, it could possibly regret and hurt his team. So you got to be smart in that aspect as well. But I do like the moves, you know, that Toronto made, and hopefully they pay dividends, you know, down the road here.
You went to 9 postseasons, though. When you were playing, was there an added emphasis when you faced the team that beat you, even if it was early on? Like, the team that eliminated you, how was that game different when you show up to the rink for the first time of the season?
Well, a little bit of a revenge factor. I think, you know, the Leafs, I mean, everyone's going to say, hey, listen, it's a new year, right? It's a new year. We got to worry about tonight's game. But I think in the back, a lot of these star players had that, yeah, listen, this team, you know, bounced us. You know, we want to come out here and show up tonight and hopefully grab 2 points. I mean, it happened the other day, you know, with Seattle and, you know, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Colorado came to play and really kind of took it to Seattle. So I'm sure it's in the back of their heads, but, you know, for the most part, I think the guys are just concerned about getting their own game kind of back on track and feeling good about their game. Because it is a long year. There's a lot of hockey games left.
Yeah. I try to listen. I'm in the business of trying to hype these things up and try to make them bigger than they are. So Right? I understand. I understand that there is the part of that. But I do wonder specifically for the new guys if tonight feels like a little bit of added pressure where you want to establish who you are within the group, right? Like, hey, these are the guys that beat you. Here's why we're going to be different this year. Tonight, there's a little bit more pressure on me to try to show what I would have done last year if I was here.
Right. It could play out like that. I mean, you know, you talk as a group, and the guys that are bringing in obviously know the situation from last year. They're not, you know, they watch the game, so they see what happened. And making the changes that Tree did over there, you know, to get to where you want to be. And could these players possibly be a difference in tonight's game? They're surely going to try. You know, you want to be that factor in a game where, you know, you can be a difference maker. But for the most part, I don't want to kind of dumb down your thought as far as hyping things up. But I think in the end of the day, being kind of the fourth game in for at least the Panthers, you know, it's just another game and you want to establish home ice. It's the Florida Panthers home opener. You want to come out and not, what a better matchup to have the Leafs fans, because I'm sure the stadium's going to be divided, always, you know, a bunch of Leafs fans in the building. So it'll have that atmosphere along with the home opener, along with what happened last year in the playoffs. So it might have some interesting, you know, story points at the end of the game.
Buddy, there might be a few less after last year. That was embarrassing. Like, we did a lot of talking up here. Oh, we're going to take over their bar, and it's going to be ice down south. And then they lost badly. You know, it's like a non-competitive series, essentially. I feel, yeah, there's probably going to be some snowbirds there, you know, some of the more quiet ones. But maybe this is probably not the one where the Toronto boys trip happens. Like, this, that, you know, we're saving that one for Buffalo to start the year. You know, let's not go down to Florida and try to be too loud in the rink tonight. So, yeah, I think that for Toronto, it's more just, yeah, the rough and tumble of it all, it seems kind of sexy on paper, especially since it felt like they got pushed around at times in that series. But you're right. This is about, for Toronto anyways, more their guys proving that they can actually play, because they're not deploying a lot of their forwards. Most of these guys have been basically stapled to the bench, and they're basically riding their horses and saying, yeah, Matthews, Marner, you know, the usual suspects, you carry us. I think it's a really, really interesting matchup for Toronto, because they get to see how their new blue line is going to hold up against Florida's forecheck and cycle, and they're going to see how their forward groups match up against a deeper, I think more versatile Florida team. The question for Florida's side is, last year in the postseason, there was a lot of belief amongst Leaf fans here and people who were prognosticating the series that Florida didn't really have a chance because their blue line stunk, that they weren't going to be able to hold up against Toronto. And now I'm looking at this, and you don't have Ekblad to start the season, you don't have Montour, who's coming off of a career year, to start the season. How have the Panthers' blue line been holding up through three games?
Well, it's you know, you're bringing in players that have NHL experience. Kulikov's played in the league a long time. Mikola, big guys, played a couple hundred games. OEL, a top pick in the league, had success in the league. So you're not kind of bringing in guys that don't have the experience. Having said that, yeah, you're adding three or four new guys on the back end. It's going to take time to kind of get that cohesiveness there, the chemistry, you know, built to feel good about what pairings are going to be until these two horses get back. In Toronto's situation, I think it's got to be, hey, listen, chip the puck in the corner and get to work on the forecheck and work on their back end, because you hear it league-wide that, you know, Florida has their back end issues right now. And I think that's one area where you can, you know, expose them. But I think thus far, I mean, when a team has played well, everything's looked good. When things go a little bit sideways, you can see a little bit of the kind of troublesome on the back end. But it's early on in the year, and hopefully that they can stay afloat, you know, till these 2 minute munchers get back in the lineup.
Okay, so you played over 1,100 games. So feel like you're the right guy to ask this, because Toronto's going through the same thing with their D pairings, right? They brought in some new guys, and they're already shuffling the pairings. Like, it's game four, and they've decided that, hey, they're not going to have McCabe with Klingberg anymore. They're going to try it out where it's Giordano and Klingberg and then Liljegren with McCabe. How long did it take for you to feel like you could settle in with a new partner? Like, you would actually start to know whether or not you were going to work with somebody?
travel takes time. I think, looking back to, say, my situation in Vancouver, I couldn't get, I'm playing a lefty. We couldn't find a defenseman to kind of play that right side. So I always get shuffled over to the right side. And then my pairings would change frequently, whether it's, year to year, game by game, or month by month, this guy's leaving with new contracts or whatever it is. It takes a little bit, but I think that, listen, everyone in this league can play, so it's all about just kind of talking it out, good communication, having one guy. Usually there's always a guy that does a little bit more offensively on a group, one guy that sits back. So you kind of develop that chemistry within each other. But it's a five-man unit. Let's face it. I mean, you got to play, as a group. If you're getting good back-checking by the forwards, it allows the D to hold up and feel confident where you're not sinking back, in the D zone, because the speed is so at a high rate nowadays that you can't get caught being flat-footed. But, overall, I guess to sum it up, it can take some time. If you're playing well together early on, it does build that confidence. You feel like you have that chemistry within each other. But sometimes when things don't go well and you're losing hockey games, now the coaches are, I don't want to say panicking, but, hey, let's try this pairing. Let's try that pairing. Let's mix up the lines. And then it takes a little bit longer for guys to develop with each other. So that's the only thing. But for the most part, everyone can play a certain position. They can log the minutes when needed. It's a lot has to do with a confidence issue as well.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, and this is just an outsider's perspective, I always felt like shuffling forward groups a little bit easier, less to figure out. The blue line pairings, to have it three games in where you're saying, yep, we're already switching this up, when you had an off season to prepare for this and you had your preseason, you said these were the groups. It always feels like a weird fundamental shift to say, yeah, we're going to take a different look at this already, rather than just let those guys settle.
On paper.
Yeah.
It's always easier on paper. It's easy to look at a season coming into it and say, okay, we got this guy penciled with this guy, and you haven't really played a game and they haven't played a game together. You got to see it. You got to live it. You got to see where maybe, as a coach, you're going to find, the right solution or the right coaching, for a certain player and a certain D pairing. And it might take a little bit of time. I don't think there's any reason kind of to panic a few games in. I think Toronto is going to be okay. They'll figure it out. But it's early on, and it's not bad to say, hey, listen, the first three games, we got to kind of shuffle things around just to find the right, pairings that we want to continue the year with.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you right now, doesn't work tonight. They go 2-2 in this city. It's not going to feel early. It's not going to feel like, don't worry.
Well, I got some opinion on, I don't know. I was watching that game for Chicago, and I'm kind of dumbfounded sometimes with this Leaf team because I grew up with a huge Leafs fan. And, I don't know whether it's the competition going into a game saying, listen, this is going to be an easy game. We all know there's no locks in the NHL today on winning a hockey game. You have to come out there. You have to compete. And if the Toronto Maple Leafs compete the way they know how to compete, I think it's a win for the Leafs over Chicago. But you look at a lot of the areas, a lot of the disconnect in that game. You're chasing the game. They decide to play when they're down, and that's kind of been the story of this group. When they really put it together, they can get it done. But why chase the game in the third period when you have the ability, to take over a game right from the onset? And I think that's an area can be concerning for a coach, where you're not starting at 7:08, you're starting at 9:00.
Dude.
And as the season goes along, it just gets harder, to chase those games. You're going to end up losing them.
Man.
And that's the thing that, I look at this Leaf team, and you can see it league-wide. Like, why wouldn't you start on time? I get you're going to have an off night.
Yeah.
But this team is built to win, and there's some concerning things in their game right now.
This is one of the most confusing things about this team. And it's not like, oh, this has just started happening. This has been all the way back to Babcock, where it was start on time, start on time, start on time. And, like, I had my friend Jackie Redmond on the show yesterday, and she brought a stat of Leafs last season gave up 58 goals in the first 5 minutes of a period. Like, they are brutal to start games. They've been scored on first all three times this season. And, for the life of me, I can't figure it out, because part of me thinks, all right, the other teams that are facing them, like you said, there's no gimmies, but also you said it. You grew up a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. How many guys around the league can say that? A lot of people that show up in Toronto or facing Toronto, they know their family, their friends are watching, all this stuff. So it's probably easier for the opposing team to get up for the game rather than Toronto, who's having 82 of these, right? So I give them like the slight touch of forgiveness for this, because it's a long grind of a regular season. And then part of me goes, all right, these guys also have had a ton of regular season success. They know they can play their way out of trouble. They know they're going to end up with, you know, close to 110 points at the end of the year. They're going to be locked into a playoff spot by before the trade deadline, essentially. So maybe some complacency does set in. But I would just think, like, a guy like you says it, and everybody else around the league says it, and everyone goes, hey, this is probably a problem for you. Like, at some point, don't you want to have a little pride and know that this is going to happen? Like, you have these sleepy starts and you show up a little late to these games. You're right. It is concerning and it's annoying. But, what do you think of that theory, those theories that I'm throwing out there? Because I just don't know what else to say about it. Like, I have no idea what else it could even be.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you that every time I played, you know, in Toronto, you're right. Half the team has some, either they're from there or they have some connection there. Mm-hmm. And it was always great getting 2 points out of Toronto.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a mecca of hockey, like going in there and winning hockey games. And there is really no home ice now. You have to be prepared to play. And my point going back was, I think when you look at the lineup for the Leafs, I mean, there's no excuse for not starting on time. I mean, the energy should be there. I don't know if it's a preparation thing or whatever. These guys are all pros. I'm sure they prepare going out there to do their best. But, you know, after a while, if it's kind of repetitive, you know, something's going on that needs to be changed. And because it does get tiresome when you're constantly chasing a hockey game. And it takes a little bit off your top guys. And this goes back to your point earlier, where a lot of the guys have been staple to the bench.
Exactly.
Well, you can't really play them if you're chasing the game. Mm-hmm. You want your horses out there because you're going to live by them getting you back in the hockey game, which they've done this year on a couple occasions. So if you build up this 2-3 goal lead or whatever it is, you can roll your four lines, you play your 60, give Matthews, give Marner, give all these top guys, you know, a little bit of a break where you're not putting the pressure on them to go out there consistently and try to get you a tying goal or a winning goal. So it's pretty self-explanatory how it all works.
Yeah,
you just got to be ready to start on time, and some nights you're going to start on time, and you're going to get beat, and that's okay by coaches if you play a great game and you just lose to a hot goaltender or whatever the case may be. But
that's right. That's right. Because and they know that in that room, and they know that with that staff, is that it's going to be process versus results with the Leafs all year, right? Yeah. If you end up getting these sloppy wins and you come back from behind and it feels like, you're winning that way, I think that outside of, you know, a number where you start to miss the playoffs, I think they'd rather have the loss where they just get the hot goalie but the process was right over getting a sloppy win that helps them continue to escape those problems, right? And let them continue to kind of build those patterns. And that's the frustrating part, is how many years in we are to this, how many different iterations of players have been around these guys, and how so many of the same issues continue to pop up the exact same freaking way. Okay, two more Florida questions for you. One is, has there been any carryover, you think, with the fan base? Like, how important is tonight in terms of, you mentioned it's the home opener, the energy that's around the team, the interest that's around the team. You just made a cup run. You got one of the most exciting players in all of hockey. Do you feel like that momentum is carrying over?
Absolutely. They've done a good job, this team. I think the whole lower bowl this year for season tickets has been taken up. So that's a good sign where you have the support and the recognition that this, what this team is, you know, is doing. And yeah, listen, I think expectations are high for this group. Mm-hmm. You know, you make a run to the finals, you want to have that sustainability where you're a consistent group and you're making a push and you're heading in the right direction. And I think the community is behind them. I think the ownership has given this group everything that they've wanted as far as whatever a team needs to feel that gives them the best chance to be successful. So they recognize that. They know it's also a long year. They know they have a couple injuries. You know, it's not going to go their way every night. But, you know, starting at home tonight is the big answer, you know, on this group. And you're facing a pissed-off team. I'm not going to say this is a must-win game, but you look at both sides. You want to establish home ice, and then for Toronto, you really want to kind of bounce back from that lackluster effort versus Chicago.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough look for Winnipeg if Florida starts to outdraw them. There were 4,000 empty seats at Winnipeg's home opener. Oof. Yeah, only 11,000 in attendance is what they counted. So, yeah, Florida, you got an opportunity. This is a big opportunity for your fan base to not get dunked on anymore. You got to have be like, hey, it's Winnipeg now. Go back up north. Go look at those guys. Hey, you say Canadians are the ones that are there? Like, maybe it's not Florida anymore. Last one.
Well, I got a question for that, though.
Yeah.
What are the other people, what are they doing in Winnipeg not to go to the hockey game?
I have no idea. It's just like, buddy, I don't want to get
maybe
in trouble.
Maybe enjoying the last little bit of the weather. Yeah. What,
the weather. Have you been there in the summer? I have. It's not, yeah, it's not the paradise. I wouldn't say, I'll just leave it at this. I don't know what their tourism pitch would be, you know? Like, I don't know what their summertime Winnipeg tourism is. Is, hey, come here, fall in Winnipeg, you got... The mosquitoes are dead now. That's what they would say. That's what they would go. They would go with now with less mosquitoes. Maybe that's it. That's when they can finally go outside. They're soaking that in. Okay. So I read this stat yesterday. At 5-on-5, the Panthers' expected goal generation went up a goal per 60 when Matthew Tkachuk was on the ice. That's the third best mark in the analytics era. And it's second best, his net rating, at a plus 27 last year to only Connor McDavid. And I was having some conversations with people about the best forwards and sort of the hype that started around this year and around Bedard, right? And I was actually going to ask you about him, but we've sort of run out of time here. But just, yeah, like the love McDavid gets, rightfully so. Obviously, Matthews has started extremely hot. There's this real buzz about, you know, Jack Hughes being... who, and again, great players. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. But I do wonder if you think Tkachuk, even after this run, even after that season, after all he continues to accomplish, if he's still underrated considering, yeah, it never feels like he ends up on the top five forward groups. Whenever we put these lists together, in fact, it's like no one has him there.
Right, and the group that's there, the guys that you mentioned.
Studs.
You know, Matthews, McDavid, they're studs. You look at what Matthew does, he's not that flashy player, and maybe that's the kind of the misconception kind of his game, but he's a very intellect player. He seems to be in the right spot at the right time. He scores big goals, and he makes everyone, you know, better around him. He drags everybody into the fight, and he has that element to his game where you can talk about these other guys that they don't have. He's a physical body. He's not afraid to finish a check. So he's kind of more of a complete guy. He doesn't have the razzle and dazzle of a lot of these top players where you see McDavid and Matthews. You know, but he just seems to get it done, and it works for him. He goes to those gritty areas in front of the net. He takes a beating. And he's not afraid to kind of throw the odd punch once in a while here and there.
Which
so,
I love.
Listen, I mean, I'm biased, you know, being here in Florida and establishing a pretty good relationship with Matthew off the ice. He's just a nice, humble kid that just wants to win. You know, you look at his contractual situation. He's set for a while. He wants to bring a championship here to Florida. And, you know, for him, just whatever it takes to get it done, he's there. But I have him in that, you know, five, six guys, you know, in the league of being a superstar for sure.
100%. Hey, buddy, good luck down at the rink today. Good luck with your midday margarita. And, yeah, have a great call.
All right. Anytime.
Cheers, pal. There he goes. Ed Jovanovski, former first overall pick, Olympic gold medalist, and a very underrated now. Not for us olds, but underrated when comparing it to Vancouver. Gold medalist. And yeah, analyst for Bally Sports. Quick break. What the hell is Sheldon Keefe going to do? Can he do anything? James Myrtle. Yeah, Austin had to remind me that there was no words coming here. This is one of my favorite songs. Damn it. I like instrumentals, but not all the time. Not all the time. Anyway, James Myrtle, senior managing editor at The Athletic. Someone who would probably be very sad if they decentralized the draft. What's up, brother?
Only because I love going, and I've been to so many of them. I've probably been to like 12 drafts. It's such a great, it's such a great event to go to, and that would be my only that would be my only sadness. I it makes sense though, right? Like none of the other sports do it the way the NHL does.
Yeah. Okay. NHL. Borrow other things from the other leagues, okay? Like, you've got a cool thing that people like and that no one ever thought of. And then they went, well, it's expensive. And then I saw, I read, and I think it was CJ's piece, actually. He was like, some guy said it's too loud. And we got a text anyway. I went, oh, you got a text, eh? That's a toughie. Boy, then we better shut her down, pal. Just a self-inflicted wound by the NHL again, where I get it. If, and by the way, if you do this, do it silently. Don't throw it out there for the court of public opinion. Like, obviously fans are going to hate change. Duh. I could have told you that, Gary.
Yeah. I mean, they tried to do it quietly, right? It's just it got leaked out from the... I know that Nashville, for them, the Nashville draft was a huge logistical mess. Like, that's why they ended up having the draft. I think it was on Wednesday and Thursday because there was, like, a NASCAR race there and there were no hotels.
Because people there were like, oh, yeah, right, hockey. We forgot about that. The 32 on the list of things to do in the city.
Tons of flights were canceled coming in. And, you know, there was all the people trying to get to the draft from Europe. It was a complete mess. And anyway,
here's a solution for the NHL teams. I got some suggestions for you. Number one, maybe start with just paring down the number of people that actually need to be there because you got 88 people at a table. And so if it's a logistical nightmare, maybe pick and choose, right? Like, hey, guess what? Yeah. If you feel like your general manager doesn't need to be there and that they're texting anyways, make an executive decision as an organization not to send the person. Reward some of your other people. I love the look of the NHL, how it is different, how it does feel like, even though this year, was there even a trade in the first round? I don't think there was. I don't think there was even like a fake crap trade.
Remember, it was really quiet in round one.
Yeah, it was. It was crap. It was terrible. But you know what? As a fan, as a viewer, I love the illusion of all these guys are on the floor together and it's they're wheeling and dealing and they're down there and they're face to face. And it's now maybe somebody has a drink and they go, you know what? Screw it. Let's make that deal. Put her there, partner. I like that. I like that idea. It's visually appealing, minus whatever Arizona does every year that embarrasses their organization further with the uniform. We're the fun team. It's like, ooh. It's never good. And the flashbacks I get to JFJ and his tenure in Toronto. But overall, I just think this is such a stupid one. If it's the costs, figure out the costs. If it's logistics, limit some of the people. But yeah, to kind of have this one be the complainy thing, I just think is lame. I think it's a lame look for the league. I'm sorry.
Well, the NHL doesn't have a single event where they get everyone together. So
correct.
This is the only one.
All-star.
As an organization at The Athletic, we bring all of our staff to the draft and we have, you know, everyone gets together. It's the only time we do it all year. So I have to rethink that if no one's all of a sudden going.
You know what? This is just a further extension of the death of office parties. Like we used to have office parties here. Not anymore. Now it's like you get invited to a lobby for cake. It's like, woo. Well,
COVID changed some things and some stuff didn't come back.
Yeah. Office parties did not come back. They left, they were gone. It was like, but that was before COVID, you know, like you'd go to an office party and they started really hot. They were awesome. They were great for bringing people together. Now it's like, or then it became, here's one drink ticket. And then it was like, here's your cake, lobby cake for everyone. Hooray. Anyway, don't do that, NHL. You got a cool thing. Just keep the cool thing going. Stop being cheap. and continue to satiate fans. I tried for a second. I tried to get there, and I went, maybe this is a case for this, and it's cost-cutting, and no. All of it is stupid. Just do the thing that you normally do. Okay, before I get into Leafs, I had these two topics for you that I wanted to get out of the way. All right, so Colorado's off to a hot start. So is Vegas. And actually, I watched a little bit of Colorado, and they looked really, really good. So I didn't watch as much of Vegas so far this season because, I don't know, it's just something about Vegas. Maybe it's the jerseys. Maybe it's everything around the team. They've never been the appealing regular season team to me. But I saw this on Puckpedia. 14 teams in the NHL, James. They cannot do what right now?
Recall a player?
Correct. Not
right.
Can't recall a single player. It is just cap hell. And this is how I am going to, I'm not trying to make excuses for what's going on with the Toronto Maple Leafs right now, but I was thinking about this as I was watching some of these games around the league, because this is my favorite time of the year where I'm flipping around, I'm doing, you know, center ice, and I'm just going this game, that game. I want to see a little bit of piece of this team, that team, that team. Outside of Colorado, who I've watched, I kind of look at a lot of these teams and go, you sort of suck. You know, maybe I'm getting older. Maybe I don't know as many of the players as I used to, but a lot of teams I just look at and say, this is very mediocre and flawed. And we've already talked about the league being pretty flat in terms of talent and a lot of the league being pretty, what's the word here? Uneventful, fine, mediocre, a little plus from mediocre. But this year it really does feel like it's coming to a head. I know the cap's going up, but boy, oh boy, oh boy. Does it feel like we're going to have this be a major story all season long?
Yeah, having the cap be almost flat for 4 or 5 years,
it's coming
created.
Roost.
Yeah, well, because every team that kind of emerges as a contender or that's interesting
immediately they just, ruined.
They don't have anywhere to maneuver, and I mean, you don't have to look further than the Atlantic Division. You know, like we've had this situation where Tampa, Boston, and the Leafs have been good for 6 or 7 years, and that's been a storyline. And look how diminished Boston and Tampa look mm-hmm. roster-wise. I mean, the Lightning are really struggling. Goaltending's part of that, but it's not the whole story there. I mean, it's to the point where the Lightning really badly want to keep Alex Killorn, and they can't because the Anaheim Ducks can outbid them for a yep. player who's been in the organization for, what, a decade? And that kind of stripping away of the depth of the teams that are, you know, the contending teams, it's not just happening to the Leafs, it's happening all over. And I know since the summer you were asking for kind of a take on, this can be your segue, but a take for, you know, the Leafs roster versus this year versus last year. And I think it's slightly diminished. And I think you can say that for basically every contender around the league, save for maybe a team like Colorado, which had a lot of injuries last year and really struggled with depth problems last year and is probably a little bit better than where they were a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Tampa's conceded more goals than any team in the NHL this year, other than a shocking, shocking, shocking team that they're tied with, which is Carolina. And I know it's early, but this is not good for the game. I'm sorry. I like parity, and the NHL always had that with the Stanley Cup playoffs. That was kind of the drill, was you got in, more than half the teams got in, and then once you got to these things, there was great equalizer of goaltending and competitiveness, and these games would be great, and anybody could end up actually winning this thing, and all of a sudden the President's Trophy didn't matter, just getting in could matter, right? Those fun LA Kings teams that we ended up watching, and now it's just across the league, where I'm watching the very worst teams in hockey, and I'm going, you're not that bad. Like, you're not the worst thing I've ever seen, and then I'm watching
San Jose is pretty gnarly if you get a chance to catch them.
I guess what? They play at 10:30 and I hate them, so no. They won't make a lot of games. In fact, I might even take those Leafs talks off because I don't want to engage with the San Jose Sharks this year. My point is I think that we've gotten to a really, really, really bad place in the game across the league where they're saying, hey, the skill is the highest. I want to have my competitive teams be able to remain competitive. I don't want the number one stories in Toronto to constantly be, can you keep the good player that you developed in-house in William Nylander? Are you going to turn on your player if he wants $1 million more and wants to get paid like, you know, the eighth man on an NBA team? And that you're seeing your roster turnover year over year over year, and you can't even enjoy 3 games of Max Domi because he makes $2 million and you're already pulling your hair out going, what could you have done with that money? We lost Sam Lafferty, right? Like this, I don't think that these are healthy debates for the game. It sucks. And the 14 yeah. teams thing I thought was a pretty jarring stat that I don't know how that doesn't end up at the desk of Gary Bettman and go, hey, aren't you a little embarrassed about this? Because this is pretty bad.
Like, yeah, they got their cost certainty. I mean, the Lafferty one is like, he gets traded because he's making $375,000 more than the league minimum.
And the Leafs could obviously use him, right? Like, they don't want to trade Sam Lafferty. You think this is a team that wanted to remove that kind of a player? They're a couple of days away from calling up Pontus Holmberg to be their 4C or their 3C or whatever C. You know, like, it's a nightmare. Anyways, so this nightmare has created this Leafs roster. I think that, yes, of course, decision-making, but some of them is like, well, what else could you have done? Trey Living tried to bring back Ryan O'Reilly. He didn't want to be here. He tried to bring back Luke Shen. Shen wanted a ton of money, and you end up with kind of a MASH unit of a bottom six, and it's a bunch of pieces that clearly don't fit at all. And we talked about it all offseason, and you kept bringing up Domi, as this is going to be a bigger sore spot for people than they're realizing, because the name is fun and the skill set on paper is great. But now you're watching him, and you get a couple of games, and he gets outscored 3-0 with Tavares and Nylander, despite those two guys looking red hot to start the year, despite Nylander looking like one of the best 10 players in hockey right now. I guess let's just start with this. What the hell do you do with Domi then? Because I don't know how, I just don't see it. I've been trying to think about 25 different ways, and I don't know where you put him.
Yeah, this was my concern with him. I know there was a lot of excitement when they signed Bertuzzi and Domi to those deals, and felt like there's a reason why Max Domi has bounced around so much. This is his sixth team in 7 years, I think. He's played all over the place. I do think that, like, he should look better than this. Like, he should at least have a little bit more offensive creativity. Like, the thing that Domi at least gives you is he's supposed to give it back at the other end of the ice. He's supposed to be able to produce some nice plays, but I think he's gripping the stick too tight, and it's kind of just spiraling on him already. It almost feels like, remember Nick Ritchie came in and just like nothing, he couldn't do anything for 20 games.
Right.
Didn't he have like 2 points in 20 games or something?
Yeah, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare.
Sheldon Keefe was, you know, calling him out after the game for having a good screen, and like they were just trying to like build up his confidence. And it feels like that could be, even though it's only 3 games, it feels like that could be where Domi's headed. And now he gets moved down the lineup, and the point you make about the pieces not fitting, I mean, it's something that we did talk about in July, and I thought that maybe this was just an unfinished roster, and they've kind of come into the year with an unfinished roster. And I think it would be okay if there were just one or two instances of that, but there's a lot more. Like, I think the roster's unfinished on the blue line. The fourth line doesn't make any sense. The third line's struggling. Nyes really hasn't gotten going, in part because he's been on one of these zombie lines that isn't able to do anything. You know, there's just a lot of examples when you look at the roster where it's like, this doesn't make sense. And you ask about what you do. I mean, if this continues with Domi, I mean, I think you give him a runway of, 12, 15 games. If it becomes clear that there's just nowhere to really play this guy and it just doesn't make sense to have him here, they do need to push money out to bring money in. So something's going to have to go. And at least he's making, you said $2 million. He's making $3 million. He's making $3 million that you can push out and bring something else back in. So that gives you some flexibility, I guess.
Okay. I just want to, I'm just going to play devil's advocate with Domi here for a second. Okay. Cause I don't think he fits. And I think that it's,
I'm not saying he fits.
No. I don't think he fits. I'm saying I'd like to play devil's advocate for the other side, like the pro Domi side. Okay. If I'm Max Domi, I grew up in the Toronto Maple Leafs locker room. I probably dreamed my entire life of playing for this team. And I'm saying this now personally, like, I actually feel a little empathy towards him because this has to suck, right? Like, you mentioned the gripping the stick too tight and the Nick Ritchie thing. Like, yeah, Nick Ritchie was from here and he wanted to have big expectations here. He wanted to live in Toronto. With Max Domi, it's got to feel like tenfold, right? Nick Ritchie never got asked about switching to his dad's number when a guy left from town. Nick Ritchie's dad didn't walk down up to a stage with the biggest act in music outside of Taylor Swift, right? Like Ty Domi did. Max Domi's dad is, known to everyone in Toronto. Like, how many people don't know who Ty Domi is here? So you're playing for your boyhood team. You're playing in front of everyone who knows who you are, everyone who's expecting you to score, everyone who's expecting you to be great. And then you come out and you face your former team in the Montreal Canadiens, a high event game, a season opener, and you play poorly. You can't get a couple of pucks out. And the very next day, there's images of your coach taking you aside and you become a focal point media-wise of, hey, here's what we're trying to focus on with Max. Like, we want to make sure that he's not turning the puck over on the offensive end, because then we're not ensuring, or we're ensuring that we're not in our D zone too much, blah, 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 blah. Like, if there's one thing Max Domi has proven he can actually do is be a playmaker. He's someone who can put the puck on somebody's stick and create an advantageous opportunity for them. And I just don't know if 2.5 games with in front of all of those Leaf fans and with 13 minutes a night as his team is chasing hockey games is enough to really figure out what you have there. And then so now, to make matters worse, for a guy who's already gripping the stick too tight, you as the head coach have decided to demote him publicly, push up the kid in Matthew Nyes, who I agree with the move, but now you've got a top six that looks great and a bottom six that has literally nothing that works. Like, nothing. There's no pieces here. You've got, what, Max Domi playing with a 19-year-old kid who's probably going to be back in the WHL on your favorite team a week from now, and Kelly Yarncrock, who's like, I don't know what I'm doing down here. I'm around. And then a fourth line that is currently getting 67% of their draws in the offensive zone, despite giving their center a 4-year contract to be a defensive player. Like, if I'm Max Domi,
yes,
I'm feeling a little bit betrayed and hurt and confused and frustrated at the fact that I became the face of the roster not fitting, despite getting 25 seconds to produce with two of the best players on the planet.
So you want to see him with Matthews and Marner then? I mean, the problem is he's not good enough defensively to play in the situations that Keith wants to play those two.
Yeah. I don't see any. The problem is you can't move Bertuzzi off that, and then you end up with Nyes in the similar situation as before, where it's like he's down on the third line with nobody that makes sense, and he's just lost. Ultimately, yeah, the left wingers don't make sense. They got, like, Domi's doesn't fit. I'm saying he doesn't fit. But can, if I'm him, again, this is just a devil's advocate standpoint. If I'm him, I'm going, do you really think things are going to change for the better? Am I really going to have a shot at doing something if you're going to put me down on a third line with Fraser Minton and with Callie Yarncroak, where I'm not going to fit either?
I think what they need to do is create, you know, and when they first signed Domi, the lineup I had created was create a third line that's offense first, that's offense only. You're going to play it in the offensive zone. Put Domi at center on that third line. You know they're going to be bad defensively. You shelter the heck out of them, but they're a weapon for you out there. And, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think who you would want to put on that line. Give him someone to play with that can put the puck in the net. Not Yarncrock and not Minton.
You know who it is? You send Minton back to Junior because, yeah, it is what it is here. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. He's ahead of schedule. He's not ready to be playing in the NHL every single night. He's got two shots in three games. Like, it's not happening right now, and it's obviously not going to be a key piece to their season moving forward. You put him down back in the dub with your beloved Kamloops team. You're so happy you get to watch. What's the pass called that you buy for that?
I think Kamloops is rebuilding. I think they're trying to go for the top pick.
They're
1-6 or something to start the year.
They lost everybody. Okay, so that's fine. Then they trade him. You don't get to watch him as much, and blah, blah, blah. You bring Robertson back up. You put Robertson on a wing. You put Domi down the middle. You put Yarncrock on the right side, and you call it the challenge line. And you say to those guys, you have the Fraser Minton 10 games. Figure it out. Score some goals. Produce, or all of you are out of here, except for Yarncrock.
I kind of liked Yarncrock up with Matthews and Marner. Like, I think
he's good moving around. He's fine. He's just one of those guys where, like, he looks okay wherever you put him. And yeah,
I don't know what you see, but I'm not 100% sure Bertuzzi fits on that line. I mean, they're giving it some rope to see if he can figure it out. But
I like him there.
Yeah, well, he's got the net front piece of it. But I think that could potentially be an option if Bertuzzi plays, on one of those other lines. But yeah, I mean, I think you signed Domi. These are the pieces that you have. So create something that makes sense around him. I mean, the funny thing is that where Domi is the best is on PP1, and the Leafs just have no need for him there at all. Like, he's hardly getting any time on the power play, but that's where he's, like, I think in a perfect world on a contending team, it's deceiving because you look last year and Domi plays in Chicago and plays tons of minutes, and it's like, well, that just doesn't make sense. But the way Dallas used him, where it was more like third line center, shelter the line, he was productive in that role. And I think that the Leafs, I mean, they signed him. They need to try and see if he can perform in a situation that makes sense. And I mean, I guess you could say, you know, he had the five periods or whatever it was playing with Tavares and Nylander, but when the leash is that short and a guy's gripping the stick, I think it can spiral on him.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's unfair. I do. I think that two things can be true, that Domi has looked brutal so far and he looks like the clear piece of the puzzle that does not fit. Well, he and Reeves both. Because it's like, we can like what Reeves is bringing, the intangibles. I believe in those things. I believe that Reeves is probably having that effect in the room. But I also know that they're getting caved in when he's on the ice, despite them starting at the other end of the rink. You know? Like, yes. It's just...
They're at like 29% of possession with that fourth line out there.
They're getting outshot double.
They've been outscored 3-0
in three
games.
Yeah.
So... not good.
No, those two pieces, but that's the point. You're Brad Treliving. You brought these guys in. You got to have some kind of communication with the coach of going, hey, I brought these dudes here and I kept you as the coach. You got to use my guys. Like you can't have them. Reeves you can have on for 9 minutes. That's fine. I don't think Treliving brought Reeves in thinking that, you know, he was going to play 13, 14 minutes a night, but Max Domi can't play 11, you know? And if he's going to play 11, he's got to have them in some spots where he at least has an opportunity to succeed. And so for me, that's it is, I get it. I understand Sheldon Keefe wanting more from Knies. I want more from Knies. I think Knies belongs in the top six. He's a better fit than Domi is with the top six, unquestionably. But for Sheldon Keefe, I would say that this is actually a bit of my criticism with him going back years, every single year. I don't think that for all the stuff we gave him, remember, what was it after, which game was it, the Ducks, when he came out and kind of hammered Marner, he benched him and people were like, oh, and he said the thing and then he had to walk back the quote. I think that was game one where he's like, something to do with a fire? We got to put out a fire. And people went, oh, Keefe, he puts his foot in his mouth. I actually think that the stuff with Domi, where instead of just going, this is a good player, he's fine, and letting him find his footing there, showing him a little bit of faith, I think that that was genuinely a mistake for the long run. Because now it just feels like he's so behind the eight ball. The avalanche has already started to go downhill on Domi. And you know how it goes in this market and how it's going to go with this team with these expectations. It just feels like it's going to be impossible for him to climb back up the mountain.
I think the way Keith views it is it's kind of like a challenge to the player, right? And does he rise to the challenge or does he fold? And if it's someone who folds, then maybe he's not the right fit for, I mean, it's... And Keefe also, you're right, he doesn't give very long leashes players.
McKee and I call him the tinkerer for a reason. Like, he's the tinkerer.
Yeah. Well, he's thinking back to watching preseason and what's not working, right? Like, he's not thinking that it's a two-game leash for Domi. He's thinking, I didn't like what I saw from him at all the way through so far.
Mm-hmm. I feel torn. I feel a little torn on it. I'm going, I don't know what Max Domi's doing here. If he can't play on your power play, and if he's so bad defensively, like Tavares and Nylander, that's not, like, I think that might end up being a story of the year, is that Tavares is not going to be super trustworthy in his own end. Like, some of the stuff that we've seen so far has been a little tough for him as well. So having those two guys with him just doesn't really work. But yeah, I don't think it's fair to a player. And what does it say for you too, a team that's going to continue to be capped out, right? You're going to have to keep trying to get these challenge players here in Toronto. That's clearly part of the model, right? You would agree that if you're going to keep these kind of players around here on these huge cap numbers, you've got to convince guys to do the bunting and the Domi and the Bertuzzi, whatever, dudes who have more skill, more talent, more ability than what they're getting on a contract. And I don't know if Domi actually was able to do much better than his deal. But tell them to come to Toronto, get to play with these players, and then get an opportunity to make their money next year. And if you're doing this to Max Domi right away, you know, and Tyler Bertuzzi's playing fewer minutes than he has since the first year he played in the NHL, I don't think that's a good look for your coach. I don't think that's a good look for your organization. And it's something that I think needs to get sorted out amongst all of the ranks. Anyway, do you want to talk about Reeves? Because I don't even know if there's a point. Like, it's just he doesn't fit, and it's intangibles versus numbers. And
yeah,
it's kind of fun debate. It's like, oof.
Yeah, if the lineup was, if they had a purpose-built line for him to play on that was kind of like get out there for 8-9 minutes and bang around the way that the Islanders do, then it would be fine. I didn't like the Reeves signing, not because I don't like the player or the person or what he brings. Is that he's going to be 37 years old this year. Like, his on-ice impacts have clearly diminished a lot the last 3 or 4 years, and they've diminished from where he was a solid fourth liner to where he's not any longer. So you know, I think he's bringing everything that he can right now. But the problem is that he's playing with Kampf, who you gave a big contract to, who's making 2.4 to play, and Kampf's minutes are down, and hasn't looked effective. Because what is he supposed to do out there? Kampf made sense when you were playing him with Mikheyev and Engvall, and that was not the sexiest line, but it was a line of guys that could work hard and skate, and you put them in the D zone, and they ate all the defensive zone starts, and their goal was get the puck up the ice, get an offensive zone faceoff, then you get the big boys out there again.
Uh-huh.
And that made sense. But right now, not only does Reeves not really make sense, it's the Kampf part that doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, they should have just not brought Kampf back. And like put Lafferty as center on that line, uh-huh, and just have some grinding guys that played 8 minutes, and then take the extra $1.3 million in cap space and do something else with it on your third line.
Yeah. Like, I think you and I have already talked about this either in text or on the show, but I think what happened was when Ryan O'Reilly left, they panicked and they went, we have to give Kampf the money. We just
have
to.
There were no other centers.
Yeah, exactly.
There were no other centers. Like, they were like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, yeah. And then the panic trade has resulted in this. And again, it feels like a situation where you know you could have something with Yarncroc and Kampf, but then I still don't know who the left winger is. Like, I still don't know who's supposed to be there without removing someone on the roster. It's like, are you letting Gregor play there? Like, is that what he does? I don't know enough about him. I've seen 10 minutes of him a night so far. And I don't know what he does really on that line yet. And I told you already, I don't watch San Jose Sharks games. So I'm Shaq. I'm sorry, young fella. I'm not familiar with your game. I need more time with Gregor before I know what he is, other than a really fun name to say who reminds me of what we do in the shadows. Anyway, all right. The blue line. So I think the forward groups don't fit. But at least I go, there's talent here and there's potential here and maybe there's a shakeup. I'm remaining a little optimistic about it. I don't want to say underrated. Damn it. I suck at words today. I'm not able to figure out the dictionary. I played Scrabble yesterday too. I should be better at this, but I don't really love that the blue line pairings are getting shuffled up in game four. But the thing is it's pretty clear that McCabe and Klingberg wasn't working. Like, I think that's more clear than the Domi thing. How important is tonight for these guys against a Panthers team that's good at all the things they're bad at, which is dealing with good cycle and good forecheck and, nine forwards who can come at you in waves?
Yeah, the blue line's actually been worse than I was expecting. Like, I thought they were going to be, and that's even with, I think, like, Riley and Brody have really settled in, other than Brody blowing the tire on the one goal against. He's been good.
He's been amazing ever since he blew that tire. Everything else has been basically vintage TJ Brody, and everyone who wrote him off of that blown tire is like, you know, maybe I got to relax.
The analytics and the underlying numbers, Brody's number one on the Leafs right now.
Yeah, what so when he's out goals there, for, right?
Yeah, like, and he's at like, 67-68%, which is like elite. It would make him one of the top D around the league. Yeah. So, and it's only three games, but it's a good sign that he looks as good as he does. But, you know, the fact that the blue line's so scary, and it's really just the one pairing. Like, I think Liljegren's been fine. I think Giordano's been okay. Mm-hmm. But the one pairing has been a black hole, you know? And I actually don't, I know there's, you know, Klingberg's another guy that we're going to be having referendums about all year.
I love him so far.
Yeah, I don't think he's the problem. Like, he is what he is. The problem is that McCabe has been brutal, and he's not the failsafe that you can play with Klingberg that I guess they were envisioning coming in. So, and the other thing too, it's the same thing with like the Kampf and the Reeves and the third line and all that is like, okay, so what's your options to switch it up? And, you know, I was trying to find a way to get McCabe down on the third pair that made sense. The tough thing is that you look at it's funny, left wing and lefty, you look at lefty, it's like you're locked in with Riley at the top, but then you've got Giordano on the third pair. You don't really want him to play on the second pair because he's 40 years old. He's the oldest player in the league.
He played too much to start last year. That was the whole thing. He had to absorb too much ice, and then come playoff time, he looked like he'd been worn down to a nub.
Yeah. But so what do you do? You know, and so I was playing around with it and I was like, okay, you know, potentially they have Timmins coming back at some point from his injury. I mean, you could break up Riley and Brody. Maybe you put Brody on the second pair. Mm. And maybe it's a Brody, Klingberg, Riley, Liljegren top four. And then you get McCabe down there with put either McCabe or Giordano on the right side on the third pair and say to McCabe, like, you got to get some stuff figured out because he's just running all over the ice. You know, he's not... He's not great with the puck. It looks like McCabe's trying to play like he's Klingberg too, you know, and then there's,
that's
and
the
he's
issue.
Not.
That's the biggest issue with the team right now, James, is that like you're talking about how, hey, Keefe's working off of the preseason as well. I don't understand how McCabe, after coming here, and he was supposed to be a bit of an anchor defensively, right? They brought him in and they went, you're going to be part of the shutdown pairing of this team. Okay, that's your role here. We want you to be responsible. That he came into this year playing the way that he has. Like, it's the biggest point of confusion for me out of everything that we've seen through three games is what the hell are you doing, man? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You're playing with Klingberg. He's the guy that does the jumping up. You're the responsible one. What are you doing?
Remember, there was the one play where Klingberg is finding him for the breakout pass.
Yeah.
And he's it's like, this is all backwards. Like, what is going on here?
I don't understand. Like, I almost feel like get McCabe up to a podium and have the reporters, like, Keefe should just say, I'm not talking today. No one else is talking today. McCabe is talking, and you guys ask him what he's supposed to be doing out here. And he goes and stands in front of you, and then you guys run through like four or five. Bourne does one of his video breakdowns. Bourne shows it, like brings up the telestrator and goes, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this. Please explain what's going on here. Like, I don't get it. It's very, very, very confusing. So hopefully him going with Liljegren is something. I don't know. I'm nervous about it because it just hit me like a ton of bricks that the success of McCabe is pretty important to this team. Like, his cap hit is not something they can replicate. He's not a swap out player, and they can't really afford for him to be a third pairing defenseman. Like, it is what it is. They gave up first round picks for this guy.
Yeah. I mean, he might be, I thought he was like a number four. Like, I think he's a second pair guy, if you play him with someone good, is going to be fine. I mean, maybe you try him with Brody again at some point, like they did in the playoffs. But you can't go, this is again is where the pieces don't really fit. You can't go Riley Klingberg, you know, like that's just, I mean, you might have to at some point, but
no, you can't do that.
So it's got to be Riley Liljegren then. And maybe Liljegren's ready for that.
But the last time they tried that, it was a nightmare.
Yeah. They just don't have a lot of options. And then you got Simon Benoit, he's doing the shuffle from the Marlies to the Leafs every day. Yeah. They send him up and down and up and down. And
well, good, because he's the athletic testing phenom, right? That's supposed to be his thing. He's great at the athletic testing. So good. He probably runs back and forth.
Across the hallway at the Ford Performance Center. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like, I mean, I guess it's like you're waiting for Timmins to come back and be the answer for you.
I'm good on that. I'll leave that one for the internet. I'll let him be the hero of the internet. We've seen that. I've seen that story before, and I don't think I've ever been wrong. So yeah, I'm good with that. I'm with you. I don't, the blue line fits feel as scary, if not scarier, than the forward fits. I did want to ask you this. I don't know if you have an answer for it. It's kind of almost unfair to throw it at you, but do you have any sense about how the Leafs feel about the Minton decision?
I think that they're aligned with what you were saying earlier. I think that, I mean, he's only played the three games.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be part of this road trip, and I think they'll probably decide after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After the three games, I think that the lean would be he's going back. So unless there's some revelation here over the next, I think it's five games, unless there's some revelation over this road trip. Part of the problem is they don't really have another answer that they're comfortable with or that they like.
It's the only reason that he's here.
They're going to be back to
got to be here.
Yeah. They're going to be back to, I don't know. I mean, the options for what they do at third line center when Minton goes back, because I think it's when, not if, unless he scores like two goals tonight or on the weekend or whatever or something.
I don't think that there's a, like he'd have to dominate.
I mean, maybe they're not generating any offense. Like he's good defensively. Like he's out there and he's in the right positions and he's winning faceoffs and like he doesn't look overwhelmed there. But that line with Minton on the ice, I think they have something like one expected goal in three games. Like it's like they're like last on the team.
Yeah.
So the options if when Minton goes back for your third line center. I don't think Holmberg, everyone's saying Holmberg, Holmberg can't play on the third line. Like they tried it last year and then they ended up sending him down. Like I think Holmberg's a fourth line guy. So I think your options for third line center are Kampf, mm-hmm. like they did last year, and try and build a defensive line like they had last year, or Domi and try and build an offensive line around him like we talked about, or you try Nylander again. I mean, those are really the only options that they've got.
Yeah. For me, I would like to start putting Nylander in some situations where you take a look at it and see if he can handle it. But, you know, I was talking about Versteeg or talking with Versteeg about this earlier in the week. It's tough because he is in a contract year and everyone was like, oh, the challenge. I'm like, nah, man, he's playing great. He looks great. A, you don't want to mess with what's working. And B, if you're Nylander, I don't want to, I feel fine if I'm doing what I'm doing right now in terms of what I'm going to get paid. And I'm not looking to sacrifice when the organization hasn't put up the big bag of money. And if you're the organization, you almost don't want to put up the big bag of money yet because you want to keep him kind of enticed here, or at least the idea that potentially that could be a part of what he's doing. That said, I do think that in an ideal world, taking a look at Nylander now as the 3C, that's and having him be the face of that offensive line with Domi and having those two guys try to operate together, that's the best idea I see it. And then put, yeah, Yarncroc and Nyes with Tavares. But I don't think they're going to do it. This secondary option to me would be, yeah, try the Domi thing at center with Robertson and Yarncroc and let it see if you can get something out of that. And then the last one is just Yarncroc camp because you know what that is. I don't think that you need more time and testing to figure out that that can work. And then I don't know who the third guy is there. Fine, Gregor. And then you make a fourth unit where it's like McMahon and Reeves and they're together and you kind of have the Bash brothers and Holmberg is down the middle.
Right. And Gregor can play center too. He played a little bit of center in San Jose last year. So, I mean, you know, if it's just 8 minutes, put him at center. And
again, I've watched three games. I have no idea what he is. So, yeah. I have no clue.
The book on him in San Jose was he would create chances with his speed, but not be able to convert on a lot of them.
Mm. He converted right away, scored the first goal of the season. That's all I know.
I know he did.
And he's a finisher.
It's one of all those Sharks fans were shouting about how come you never did that for us at the end of the season last year.
Yeah. Either way, that's the way I see the center. One of those three options, and here's what I'll tell you. None of them are all that sexy. I just wonder with the Minton decision if there's any thought. Like, he's going to go on the road trip. They can't back off it after two games. That's awful. They have to let him kind of play this out. But I did wonder if they think, maybe we should have just sent him back down to junior and known that this wasn't going to work out and let him have the high and the promise of that rather than exposing him in the NHL and saying, making him feel like, oh, crap, maybe I'm not as close as I thought. Like, I just wonder if there is a bit of a psychological case. I'm a big believer of, like, you should be able to swim, right, and that he's a mature kid. He's probably going to be all right. But Smarket's a lot. And we've seen this happen to players before. And I would be, I was pro keeping Minton here. So I'm not going to change my opinion. I'm not going to, like, criticize the Leafs for doing it. But, yeah, I just wondered if maybe there were some people in there that went, maybe it was just better to have him be confident down in the WHL rather than have him lose confidence in the NHL.
I mean, yeah. I've watched tons of him, and I just there was no way he was going to be ready. I mean, he's a second round pick. He didn't even light the WHL on fire last year. He's not a big time offensive player even in junior. I mean, the whole point of this year for him should be you're going to be the best player on this Kamloops team that's not very good. You're going to play 21 minutes a night. You're going to be on the top power play unit. Go down there, be one of the leading scorers in the league. Light it up. Play for the Canadian World Junior team, and come back to us next year as, you know, a really really high-end prospect who's added another layer to his game. And the thing, I just never thought he was going to be able to make this work. So it feels like kind of like what's the point? You know, you've got these problems with your lines and you're kind of just punting the decision deeper into the season by doing this. You're just waiting for the inevitable where you're going to have to decide what you're doing here.
I think they were hoping for a miracle that he and Nyes were going to develop some kind of chemistry and that they were going to have a little bit of an offensive push and be passable and something where they would have gone, you know, this is interesting. Let's take a look at it. But I think that what they have found out and what they're going to continue to find out is the stuff that you said, which is, it was just a really, really tough situation. I think that's the most depressing thing if you're looking at what the center options are, how they feel about the other ones, is that they punted the decision hoping for a miracle from the 19-year-old kid that was the second-round pick, right? That they went, nah, we won't try Domi. We won't try Nylander. We won't try the Kampf connection with Yarncroc here. We won't bring up Holmberg. We're going to go with the Hail Mary. I mean, all credit to them, but oof, not a great start when it comes to the puzzle pieces fitting. It would be great. It would be really, really kind of funny if this ends up being the best versions of Matthews, Marner, and Nylander we ever see at the same time, and then all the pieces around them end up being the worst they've ever had.
Well, I mean, it looks like a team that whatever trade or whatever acquisition they make over the course of the year is going to be really important.
Yep.
And it looks like a team that needs a top four defenseman and it needs a top three center, probably a third line center. And they've got no cap space. They've got, as we talked about off the top, they're so capped out that they can only recall one player and they're using it on Simon Benoit right now. Mm-hmm. They can't even shuffle in a bunch of Marlies up front regularly to like test a bunch of different people. I mean, that would be one of the other things I would look at. So it's going to be money out, money in to make an acquisition, and they really need to make two. And it's going to be a challenge because those are the marquee positions where teams are going to be looking to add at the deadline. So, there's lots of rumors that potentially the Leafs could make a trade long before the deadline. Like maybe it's like a November or a December thing. Mm-hmm. We'll see if they can find something that makes sense.
I was going to say October 19th deadline talk with the Leafs. We did it. Record. New record. Beat that. Beat that other show.
It's the only way they can make it. The lineup makes sense, in my opinion. So, and in the meantime, I think that they should just, they need to experiment a little bit more and put some guys in different positions. And, you know, I would look at moving Bertuzzi around the lineup a little bit, you know, maybe try Yarncroc or Nyes up there with Matthews and Marner. Cause you know, whoever's there is going to succeed. Right. So It's really about trying to get something going on the other lines.
James Myrtle, senior managing editor at The Athletic. I hope that you still get to go to many, many drafts moving forward. Thanks for making time, buddy.
Me too. Thanks, JD.
Cheers, pal. I know that people always say everyone who talks about this is a sensationalist. I think that's a fair criticism. It happens. I do it a lot. I don't see how they're going to be able to figure out these pieces. And like James said, move Bertuzzi around. Like, you want him to potentially play less? He signed here on a one-year challenge deal. And I will say this. I disagree with James about him not looking good on that line. I think that there's been a couple of clunky moments, and he needs to shore up the penalties. But I think that his intelligence, it already shows he knows how to play with guys like that. There's been multiple moments where I go, oh, these guys, they've had some just dominator shifts. And of course they have. It's Matthews and Marner, you're saying, right? Hey, put anybody else with those guys, and they should be able to carry another player. And I think that there's a case for that. But no, Bertuzzi has looked like a real part of that so far. And my issue is you need to keep building teams this way. You need to make sure that players are going to want to come here. When they look at other markets, it's like Marcus Semien, same deal. Hey, I don't love the contracts that are out there. Screw it. I'm coming to Toronto on a money deal, and I'm going to play with good players and be in a good spot, and I'm going to get my big contract extension next year somewhere else. You have to have that be a part of the template. And yeah, you start bumping Domi to 11 minutes and you bump Bertuzzi below 16 down to all of a sudden 15 minutes and he's on power play one. Oof. I don't know. Doesn't feel like if I was a free agent, I would be looking at that feeling like, yeah, I want to take, I'd be going, okay, you had Bunting, that worked out, but then you had Richie, you had Bertuzzi, you had Max. Okay. I don't know. Maybe not for me. All of a sudden Klingberg is down to the third pairing. Got to wonder about what his ice time is going to look like at $4 million. Just gets a little less enticing for the other guys that are out there that already have their questions about a market where there's a ton of pressure, a ton of media, big time fan scrutiny, blah, 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 blah. The taxes. Quick break. Let's hit what we missed.
Toronto Maple. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. What did we miss?
So the MLB Gold Glove nominations came out yesterday. There are five Toronto Blue Jays included. You got Matt Chapman at third, Dalton Varsho in left, Kevin Kiermaier in center, Alejandro Kirk at catcher, and Jose Berríos at pitcher. First reaction to the nominations. You surprised at any of them? Are there any Blue Jays you feel should have been in there?
No. I will say that, I don't know, am I supposed to know that Berríos was actually like a Gold Glove pitcher this year? That kind of
nominated in 2022 as well.
Yeah, that kind of went over my head a little. Kirk, good for him that he got that nomination. That's a big step up for him. The only thing is, we'd much rather see you hit, buddy. So if you're going to pick one or the other, you're supposed to be special for the bat, not the Gold Glove. Chapman, I think, was not Chapman this year. I think that, sure, he can be in the Gold Glove conversation, but his standard dropped. And then the other two guys, there's a very, very strong case that they could win or that they should win.
Yeah, Varsho and Kiermaier.
All right, what's next?
So Ryan Reeves, post-practice availability, was talking about Corey Perry and their little rivalry, and he had this to say.
Yeah, I mean, I never really liked him, to be honest. We always seem to kind of run into each other when we play against each other, but, not a lot of love for that guy. Just the way he runs his mouth. I don't know. He kind of acts tough. He's not tough. I don't know.
Ryan, is he doing too much now at this point, or listen, you still love it?
No, listen, I a lot of people hate Corey Perry, like the worm, you know?
Yeah.
I would just say this. Corey Perry is not fighting you, Ryan, not only because he would lose. It's like Corey Perry is a Stanley Cup champion. He's a multi-time NHL All-Star. He actually has a Rocket Richard trophy and a Hart Memorial trophy from 2011 when he also made the first All-Star team. He's got a Mem Cup. He was also on the Mem Cup All-Star team. This is not even, I'm not even going to go through like his OHL awards because there are plenty. He's got two Olympic gold medals. He's also got a World Championship gold medal, a Canada Cup, World Cup gold medal, and a World Junior gold medal. Like,
just going down the list.
Sure, you're tougher than him. Sweet. Next.
Imagine if Corey Perry was a Leaf.
Just, like, there are weight classes to this, Ryan. And, it's not the weight classes of the fighting game all the time. It's one guy is a Hall of Famer. Anyway. That's a tough look. Like,
kind of acts tough. He's not tough.
Yeah, I can't. Honestly, it's cringy. It's too much. Anyways, what's next?
Nathan Rourke got signed to the practice squad. Jacksonville Jaguars with Trevor Lawrence dealing with the injury.
Nice.
Yeah, NFL starter. Hey, flag football 2028.
Hey.
Canada starter.
Yeah, unquestionably.
There you go. Silver medal, too.
Silver medal.
Yeah, we should be allowed to send the NFL fellas. I think we'd all love to see Nathan Rourke eventually play in the NFL. This is a step towards that direction, but yeah, he's not going to play, so who cares?
Oh, come on. You have a little bit of
faith. He can play today.
No, he's not. He ain't playing. First of all, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to end up playing. This is an emergency measure, and then there's another guy ahead of him. So it's got to be like the Any Given Sunday situation where multiple quarterbacks go down in the game for Rourke to get in there. So just don't throw up on the field, Nathan. If you get in, don't throw up on the field. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Do all those nice things. Share it. Follow on Twitter and Instagram, at JD Bunkus, where, you know, if hit 2 best bets in a row, it's fine. Pretty good at it. I'm the man. Plus money. No big deal. Anyway. See you tomorrow with Ariel Helwani and Brian Boyle.
Go back into the studio. I'm done now. Thank you. What's